A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Benjamin Richardson.
Hello.
And Josh Brown.
Hello.
Now, I walked into the office this morning and I barely had I set foot in the kitchen before Benjamin walked out to me and he said, do games get worse the more that you play? And I thought, that's a really good idea for a podcast because I couldn't answer that at all.
Yeah, Scott, I've been thinking about this all weekend.
Yeah, I had about seven different things and I was like, it just depends on the story, it depends on what the mechanics are, it depends on X number of different things. What did both of your or either of your initial reactions to that question?
Well, I actually started writing an editorial about a month ago called Why Video Games Are Too Long, so I think I broadly agree with
you're
this
the
idea.
You're a big proponent of all movies should be an hour and a half.
That is true, well. To be fair. This is not just a gaming thing with me. Everything should just be shorter, like 20 minutes, not for games.
But, the bulk of your film recommendations to me begin with, it's really good, it's 90 minutes, before you tell me about its obscene, lewd content.
Yep, it's always a little bit of the lewd content from Mr. GB. There's something about, I mean, that's on the just for quickly on the film side, there is something about time being like this like sort of commodity and this thing that we sort of, well, we're more aware of these days than I think we ever were before because of the amount of things that are vying for your attention. And for me, whenever I look at a long film, I always immediately go, okay, I'm not going to resume my life for 2 hours. And that always like puts me off getting invested in a lot of stuff.
It's such a weird paradox because us as consumers and players and watchers are thinking that, where at the same time, developers are saying, here are games that you need to play forever. This is all we're making now. We're making live service experiences that
and
you will need to play for 3 years.
Saying mm-hmm. it's worth paying for this because the value is much higher than something that's shorter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that just in terms of length, when it comes to like films and games for me, mm-hmm. if I know in advance it's going to take 5 hours, I'm thinking that's 5 hours definitely taken up from this night. Mm-hmm. That'll fast forward time.
Only if you do it in one sitting, you maniac. Yeah,
to the point where I need to go to bed and get up and go to work. As for games, the original question, the games get worse as gone, I obviously have given this some thought since I asked you it this morning. And I think they do.
Right.
Because I think what happens is with a lot of modern games is that they front load a lot of content, a lot of the features and a lot of the mechanics, mm-hmm. and you get used to them and you think this is great. And maybe after maybe 5 or 6 hours, you've sort of experienced everything that you're going to, and you just start doing...
On a mechanical level,
mm-hmm. yeah. And you start to do like... decreasing faded versions of it over and over again. I also think some of the annoyances of the game become more pronounced as it goes on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, what was the thing that initially made you want to pose that question? Because that was you didn't even say hi. That was the first thing you said.
I think I said morning.
You might give me a little bit of a morning.
I've been playing Grand Theft Auto 3 recently, and I was wondering, why is this game a lot more fun? Why am I enjoying this now in 2019 just as much as I did in 2001? Mm-hmm. When I found GTA 5 such a slog.
Yes.
And I think it is down to the length and the variety and the fact that, you know, in GTA 5, I grew frustrated with it from when I was playing it because mm-hmm. the immediate factors that wow you don't have that power 50 hours in, mm-hmm. but the things mm-hmm. that frustrate you, like the lack of interaction or the little glitches or the bad story beats, they really start to grind. And I think I had the same experience with Skyrim especially, mm-hmm. Where it always felt like the world was falling apart around me.
For the GTA thing, just quickly, like I guess with GTA 3, it's interesting because you do only have one set of mechanics at the beginning that last that whole game, whereas like from San Andreas onwards, they started bringing in the different stat trees and the skill tree type stuff, or the things that you were going to upgrade, like you could unlock twin pistols or whatever in San Andreas. But yeah, like in GTA, like there is a big appeal to those older ones.
I think there's a really big thing with GTA 5 as well is that the entire map is unlocked from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Which, so it's effectively saying, if you don't want to do the story, you can jump in and do all the sandbox stuff straight away. Mm-hmm. And for me, there's no sense of progression.
Right.
Whereas with San Andreas, you unlock the map piecemeal and it constantly feels like it's evolving.
Mm-hmm. For the sake of that, like the next thing I had down was like, have you ever like just bounced off a game for it just being overwhelmingly huge, or even ahead of time just gone, I'm just never going to get through this, so why even start?
Normally I'm okay with it. There have been a few exceptions to this. Monster Hunter World was a game where I just thought, this looks impenetrable, and I haven't played the other ones. It looks too dense. I know this is going to be 100 hours of my time, so I might just have to leave it.
Do you mean like on a skill level though, as opposed to something like Final Fantasy VII, which I'm telling you to play every minute of the day?
Yes, and the reason I don't go back and play Final Fantasy VII is because you always keep saying how long it is and how long it's taking you to play it, which is another imposing kind of weird thing where you have to, when you're recommending a game, you have to also say, oh, this will take up X amount of hours. Mm-hmm. But I don't think in that case, it's not, I'm worried the experience would get worse. It's purely a time thing, because games I played this year have definitely gotten worse the longer they've gone on.
I think with JRPGs, certainly JRPGs of that generation, the experience gets better because your characters level up and get better and you get more skills.
Story-wise, you're more invested.
Yeah. You get more to transport. It isn't just the same thing ad nauseum as it is in Final Fantasy 15 to a greater extent.
Well, I agree with what you said there, Benji, about when the game goes on, if you don't have anything new to do or you're not feeling that sense of progression, then the quirks and the things that you were annoyed with just annoy you so much more.
I think the great example of a one game that breaks that rule is Breath of the Wild. And I remember when I first picked it up, I was sort of...
2 years later, but it was still good.
Yeah, it was only about 6 months, but yeah, I was hesitant, basically. I was quite pessimistic because it broke from the Zelda formula that I really love. Now, something about the original Zelda formula is that it's constantly introducing new mechanics as it goes on, so it never really becomes boring. There's something to look forward to down the line. And I was thinking, I get all these mechanics at the very start. Mm-hmm. What's going to sustain my interest? Mm. And I think the great thing about Breath of the Wild, although you can do everything from the start, is that those fundamentals are so robust and used in such a variety of ways that it does retain your interest and you become truly engrossed in the world. Whereas something like The Witcher 3, it's a great game.
You slander my Witcher 3, Benji.
No, I'll say it up front, it's a great game and it's got a lot of merit, but I felt like it wasn't going anywhere beyond the first 5 hours. The first area is virtually identical.
Have you not seen level 2 of Agni? You can push more people. Set them all on fire, mate.
That's what I mean. But I did feel like I was just going through the motions at the end of that, whereas Breath of the Wild, the sense of discovery didn't really
go away, I think it's that thing where it's like, if a game developer gives you a bunch of tools, it's like giving you the toolkit at the beginning. Like Breath of the Wild is a perfect example of, here's everything that you can possibly do, but you don't realise how many different applications it's going to have.
Well, that's because it's so versatile and because the systems work in such unison, and it's so unexpected. There's so much scope for emergent gameplay that you don't get with something heavily scripted, like even though it's not necessarily supposed to be, and they're not sold in this, but something like GTA 5 or Red Dead Redemption 2.
Well, GTA is a perfect example. I don't know if all you guys watch Nakey Jakey, but I sent you a video for him. You should watch Nakey Jakey. Nakey Jakey's really good. We're not sponsored by Nakey Jakey, but he's really, really good. He did a really cool video on Rockstar's game design being outdated, and he compared GTA 3's mission structure to GTA 5. And I remember doing this in GTA 3, where like you have to take out this guy that's like running down this street or whatever, and he gets into a car at the end. And if you think ahead of time, if you restart the mission, you can bomb his car, and you can put a bomb in it so that when he gets in, it'll blow up, or you can park something in front of him. There was all this idea of experimentation within a sandbox, and Rockstar took all that away as they went forward. So you didn't have that toolkit sort of feel anymore, and then as a result it does feel like you're going through the motions in a way that you aren't in GTA 3 Vice City and San Andreas.
It makes sense in the regard that they're trying to sell the newer games as being more cinematic and we're having more set pieces, but for also selling them on being these open world sandboxes, and the two things just do not mesh whatsoever.
Yeah, which is the overall like conclusion that he draws, which I'd like totally agree. It is that thing though of like, I've looked up a whole bunch of different game completion stats and sort of Googled the idea of like just how many people do finish games. And a lot of that data is very hard to come by because like Sony and Microsoft don't advertise it too much unless you start digging into trophy data. But if you go back to 2011, that was when Kotaku published their 9 out of 10 people won't finish games piece, which CNN sort of left on as well, which I guess is an immediate reaction. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I know, I think we're kind of an anomaly because, I mean, we do this mostly for a living, but when I'm talking to friends from home who are into games as much as we are, that might sound a bit of a paradox considering they don't finish
games. Gonna get a tattoo at one point,
yeah. But like, they play games, they love games, but they don't often finish them. I know someone who didn't finish The Last of Us, but would still say they loved it, but even though they didn't get the entire story, like, especially now when we have all of these open world games, it's very easy, especially if you play a lot with friends, to just drop what you're doing and move on to the next big thing, I think.
I mean, I think, like, in that case, like, yeah, I will also say right now that I have more up-to-date statistics than just the 2011 thing, but that seems to be when the conversation sort of came in, when we started to see games that would, like, play more into the open-world genre. Like, I've got some good statistics. Statistics throws me off the word statistics, with looking at the way the Assassin's Creed games sort of went. If you look at the size of something like Origins or Odyssey compared to what those original games were, they were always open-world, but now it is, like, another world that you're sort of jumping into.
Well, I'll ask another question as well. How often do you go back and replay a game from the last 5 or 6 years?
Never.
To completion.
I've been replaying a lot of older games. I'm replaying Metal Gear Solid now.
You just finished Spider-Man.
No, I'd played the DLC. I didn't play it again.
One thing I noticed was I got this feeling that I didn't like games, which I wasn't playing them as often because, you know, I felt like I wasn't finishing as many games. But when I looked back and went back to games I'd played in my youth, things like GoldenEye and Mario 64, I found I could complete them again very quickly.
Right.
I actually end up completing most of the games I played as a child once more. So in fact, I'm actually playing more than ever.
It's weird because
I'm just not getting through.
I've gone back through Final Fantasy VII like, since all the remake stuff came out. I think some of that is nostalgia. I think some of it is that the mechanics are easier to get your head around. The scope of those all those games is,
I think it works,
it's easier
harder
to know what you need to do.
I think it works harder to keep you engaged for the whole duration.
So, I mean, yeah, engagement's an interesting thing, especially in terms of like the big open world stuff, like The Division or the Ubisoft games, where you can tell they have a very specific formula, but it's going to be the same after an hour as it was after 10 minutes. How much does that impact your, like, your actual engagement with something?
Ah, lots, especially when it comes to like the Ubisoft formula. I like the look of the new Assassin's Creed games, and I used to love that franchise so much, but it looks just kind of, I don't want to do this. I don't even want to do it once, never mind go through it and replay it again. It's just so, the difference between something like that and Breath of the Wild, I think a lot of Ubisoft games, and Days Gone as a recent example, like really struggles to, perhaps gamifies their mechanics too much, where it does feel like you're just checking things off a list and there's no variety to how you tackle specific missions depending on where you are in the game.
Even the presence of those lists can make it seem like a chore, like work.
Right.
Like a Breath of the Wild, it does do it for side missions. I actually think that's those are the weakest part of the game.
So, I would agree.
Have you not played golf?
Yes.
There's a whole golf minigame in Breath of the Wild, you might not know.
Not the minigames, but the actual side quests that the NPCs give you, where it's like, do this, get that, and you just feel like, again, you feel like you're just going through the motions, doing some busy work.
And bring it back.
Whereas when you discover a shrine, it feels like you've found that and you've done that, and this isn't something a game has prescribed to you.
Like that,
you're not just ticking it off.
That whole thing of like, like serving everything up front, like that idea of prioritizing the upfront stuff. I'm going to go back to the 2011 stats just for a second, because Giant Bomb, the website, used to have this whole thing, this whole massive algorithm, which was brilliant for the time, where they designed a whole thing that would automatically troll, PlayStation trophies and achievement data, and I think Steam stuff at one point, and bring it back in so you could get a completion stat for each game. And so some statistics from back then, I'm just going to reel through these. Actually, you guys can give me a percentage on how many people you think would have finished these games. Fallout 3.
45%.
Okay.
That's a little higher than that, maybe 60.
You're both wrong. It's 43.39.
Oh, we're so close.
So these are only taken in 2011. So like I said, I'm going to get more update in a bit. We've got some 2018 stats as well. So yeah, Fallout 3, 43.39. Red Dead Redemption.
The first one?
Yes.
I want to stick with a solid 50% again.
Okay.
This is a fun content. This isn't it. Random numbers.
Yes.
55%.
Nerds, 50.5.
Ah!
You're both very correct. We'll speed this thing up a little bit. GTA 4.
I reckon that's quite high. I reckon it's about 65%.
I think it's in the 52 range.
You're both wrong. It's 39.03%.
Less than Red Dead. Interesting.
Now I'm just going to tell you some stuff. Halo 3 was 57.16, which, I mean, I think people would have saw that trilogy through, but I guess not back then.
Imagine how many people only played it for the multiplayer, though. Like, we love the story, but I assume there's people just like, I want a more arena shooting.
Weirdly, when I get to the 2018 stuff, people do seem to gravitate towards, you can tell something that's story heavy, like the Uncharted series has really high completion stats. Yeah, Gears of War 2, 57%. Hannah Montana, 58%. The Hannah Montana fandom getting stuck in. Mass Effect 1, 58.7. Which, like, I don't know, considering that's the first one and it kickstarted so much, you kind of just think that more people would have seen it through for the sake that Mass Effect 2 picks up right from where that one left off. Assassin's Creed 2 is the one I've got at the end of the 2011 stats with 59.45. Which I don't know if that blows your mind or not, because Assassin's Creed 2 was the one that was the most beloved.
Interestingly, though, I think a lot of those games mentioned are quite long, at least compared to your regular, except maybe Halo and a couple others. Like, GTA is a long game. Assassin's Creed, even Assassin's Creed 2, is a decently long game, you know?
It's but like, one of the overall takeaways as well is that pretty much if you take an average, it's in the 60s. So it's like, I kind of extrapolated that to ask the question, do we think that we finished 60% of games? Like, if you just apply that as an overall
rule.
Here's a question. I want to take that question and throw one back at you.
Bring it.
Because especially recently, I think the idea of completing a game has become so nebulous. When I used to get new releases and stuff, I used to play them through to completion. By that, I mean the main story, all the side missions, not necessarily collectibles, but definitely the bulk of the main content, quote unquote. But now I don't have that same drive because I don't think there's any sort of value in completion really anymore, especially when it comes to live service games or new sandbox games. Even The Witcher 3, which I put 100 hours in, I still had side quests lingering. I still had a lot of the misc activities to do because I don't know what completing a game is anymore. Is it the main story? Is it the main story and everything else? Or is it just getting your fill of the experience and then when you hit a mechanical ceiling, then is that when it's done?
Maybe I'm old school, but I would say that completing a game is the main component, is the main story. I mean, it's hard in some games like Division. Well, like Division 2 does have a main story. So I don't know, like Warframe, I don't know how the hell you finish Warframe or Rocket League. But
public games that you've listed there all have very, very clear completion states. You have credit sequences and endings.
Credits is a good one to go for.
I recently played Fallout New Vegas and I was absolutely... So you know, that was much longer than I was expecting. And it actually did keep me engaged, even though I've played Fallout 3 and I've played Fallout 4. And it's very similar, but the way it did that is by just being written way, way, way better.
I was going to say, I guess it's like trying to match like an overall narrative or like a... Because like I was going to say, trying to match a narrative to an overall game length. Like one thing I've never really drilled into, which I can probably do as an editorial or something, is why this idea of game length is kind of a mystery. Like there's a really cool website called howlongtobeat.com that just archives the average completion stats. People will just post them. Like, oh, it took me 10 hours, it took me 15 hours. And so like, that's really good. But like going into a movie, you know how long it's going to take. Like, you know, like I guess with books, you can get an average length or something. But like with games, it's nearly always just held back, and I don't know why.
I
was just going to say, it's interesting you mentioned that because games a long time ago, games on the Master System,
back when we were young,
in the 80s and 90s, the boxes used to specify how many levels we had. So it was a sort of an expected length, but that was actually being advertised as look how long it is, this is how much time we're expecting you to invest in it.
Well, the Final Fantasy games used to have, like, you know, featuring 8 hours of cutscenes or like whatever, but they don't anymore.
I think sometimes used to say, oh, like over 50 hours of gameplay, used to get random quotes like that. But it's, I think the reason why maybe hold back now is because it could be a little bit off-putting.
Maybe. Is that what you were going to say?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I remember back at the dawn of the 360 generation when people were getting up in arms that games were only 8 hours or 6 hours and stuff. I can't remember the last time a new game came out and it was criticized for being too short. Like, I think a big AAA release, I can't.
Sonic 2.
Remember, Sonic 2. That was a long time ago, man.
Metal Gear Solid was heavily criticized.
I love all these references from 1993 and then 1998. Yeah. It's been 20 years!
But it's just actually interesting. But that used to be a criticism.
Which I would say this too short thing is still a criticism.
But less so, but maybe that's why games evolved to be always longer, always bigger, always better.
So, I mean, talking about that, marrying a narrative, like, you know, a narrative drive or whatever to, like, a set of gameplay mechanics, the thing that sticks out to me is Ultimate Alliance 3. I still think I like that game, but, like, I didn't really care what was happening until, like, 3 hours in. There's a bit, like, halfway through, and, I mean, who cares about this? It's not a spoiler, but there's a bit halfway through where something finally goes wrong for the heroes. And that was, I was finally like, okay, there's actually some stakes, because the whole thing until then is just kind of this, like, I called it when we did the joint review, like, it's this fireworks display of Marvel things, and that's totally what it's going for, but it literally sent me to sleep 4 times, and I kept messaging you, because I would play it for a bit, I'm just hitting the buttons, I'm killing stuff, and I would fall asleep, and every time, middle of the day, I'm asleep, and so, like, for me, I realized that I do need that pull, I at least need something, anything, like, because the Division 2, like, over time, was just the same thing, like, you know, and I want to get this term off the ground, it's just mastication for the thumbs, just something to do for a bit of time, and I was like thinking that for Ultimate Alliance 3 until it started to click more. But I don't know if you've found that with some games too.
I think game stories are like game length is kind of detrimental to game stories or telling game stories. Days Gone, I keep going on about it, that's the biggest
thing. It's totally valid though,
because that had such great characters and a great story to tell, but when it had to be bloated out to 40, 50 hours long, it just had no sense of pacing, and it was like 4 mini stories in one and nothing connected in one of those storylines or threads in that game. If that was its entire thing in a condensed 10, even 20 hour experience, would have been fun, but at the very end of the game when you're 30 hours in, you get a new villain, you get a new area to explore, and this has no consistency or coherence to what has come before. There's no narrative through line, there's no thematic through line, it's just stuff and stories and mythology.
That's more equitable to reality, where there's no linear narrative in your life when you're surrounded by so much stuff. It's just things happen, events move on.
That aimlessness, like,
I was going to say, but like in life, you're engaged because you're alive and you are you. Yeah. But in a game, it doesn't have the same impact, does it?
No. They're like the best marketing like consultant ever. To, well, they're alive and there's things to do. So I've been playing for like 500 hours. But that's, I guess that's the difference between like a premise and a story.
Sorry to interrupt there, but that's why Breath of the Wild is so engaging, because you know your one objective from the very beginning and it's remains the same from start to end. It's go out and prepare. When you're ready to take him on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that being so open-ended, that's why I love Breath of the Wild so much, because they did, that is the narrative. It's like, yeah, learn to become the hero of Hyrule. It's obviously amnesia.
It's literally kill Ganon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Whenever you're ready. Yeah. And like that might take you, you know, you can do it in 15 minutes if you want to, but like it can take you a lot longer. But yeah, that idea of like, it's like something like just a base premise versus a story. I'm like, for me, if you're attempting the story, then it starts to fall down again, which is kind of my whole thing with like wasted potential or whatever. But I don't, because I think you're the only other person in the office that's played Ultimate Alliance 3.
Yeah.
But did you find that it was just lacking that sense of drive?
There's no drive to that story at all. It's not well told. It's barely there. It's just an excuse for people to fight. But then when it does take precedent over the gameplay, it's well, you've wasted your entire premise. Like, you can't just suddenly at the very end try to make an emotional point or a thematic point or a big conclusion, because it doesn't work, because you haven't seeded those seeds.
But that's weird. You've not laid your potatoes. That's the weirdest thing, though, because if you compare, like I said, stories and premises, like Super Mario didn't need a story other than go jump on some, like it's a plumber who can jump and there's a princess that needs saving and she's in another castle. That was all we had, and it didn't really matter, which like is the thing that we've gotten away from. Like, hardly any games just give you like a base one sentence premise. Occasionally they do, like, but it's, I don't know, I find that in, because they've tried to explore all this story based territory, sometimes it just bites them in the behind.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Well, I just kind of think there's, in a lot of these big long games now, there's just kind of like no consistency or coherence between the disparate parts of gameplay versus story versus location versus level design. Like, again, going back to Days Gone, it's just a bunch of stuff. And it's there's such a focus on trying to make the game as big as possible and have so much capital C content that the story is just one part of it. It's not the defining feature that everything else is built around. And I feel like a lot of games now are built with that same mentality of, oh, we'll have one team working on this, we'll have one team working on this, and then we'll just chuck it all together and hope it works. There's not... Breath of the Wild is so good because it has one sort of major kind of focus, and that's like the adventure and the exploration, and then everything else is kind of sprang off that. It's not just a bunch of different like levels or different mechanics thrown together because that makes a lot of content. It's like one unified thing that I don't think a lot of games are.
Which, yeah, as like another question, it's like, how much do we care about what we're doing? Like, for me, I just need to be pushed in a direction and I'll go.
Something I sort of touched upon before is that the games which have engaged me most recently are the ones which haven't really stipulated my experience but sort of guided it. So one of the most engrossing games I played of last year was Return of the Obra Dinn.
And the
story in that doesn't actually, it isn't expounded in any way other than that you arrive in the boat and you try and discover it for yourself and piece it together in your own mind. There's actually nothing in the game forcing you to do that. You can actually leave without discovering the identities of everybody. And the same applied to her story, which we've mentioned on here before, which again, you piece together that story yourself on your own pen and paper, and whatever you come away with is what you get from it. There's no like end state.
There is like a big twist. In that game, there is a twist.
Not as such though, because like you don't necessarily discover it. You could come away from the game having not done so.
Maybe.
Like, there's no checks to tick off. So I think, and what these two games have in common, they're both designed and written by one man.
Yeah, they sort of
completely weave the storyline in with the gameplay. There's none of this like these disparate
there's these random game elements, conditions, mechanics, and stuff. As opposed to that's the thing. It's like overall, like I guess I don't know if it's about I definitely like I chase that element of design that I think is completely missing in the big the newer Assassin's Creed. I enjoy playing them to a point. Like I can only put like a couple 20-30 hours into one of them. Maybe I'll see the story through or whatever, and then I feel like I'm really done because I'm not going anywhere other than making certain numbers go up. I think that's also why we see like the big proliferation of that type of skill tree. Yeah. It's the only skill tree you can apply to a 100-hour experience.
It's also plus five. It's the easiest way to make a game continue, give you new things without actually putting in original and new content.
I don't know if you guys think the same, but when we get a big open world game like that, or just a big game that has side quests, I always say when I'm invested into the story and I've got this driving force propelling me forward, I always say, you know what, I want to do this because I'm enjoying this, and then I'll finish the side quest later. And then I finish the main story and I'm like, I'm not finishing the side quest later. I have no drive to do that anymore. Like, why am I doing it? It's just content for content's sake.
I used to the exact opposite. Games have a very tough task making me actually care about the most important part of it.
What was something you played that you told me about where you did all the side stuff and then you didn't care about the main thing anymore because you'd like spent so much time in that world?
It might have been The Witcher 3.
Maybe.
I'm also thinking back to Final Fantasy VII. I don't know, I actually did care, but it's like you've got this huge meteor looming over the planet. It's like, don't bother with that. Forget about that. Go and raid some chocobos.
To be fair, that doesn't happen until the last like 3 hours.
Yeah, but the whole point is I had no motivation to actually finish that game. I wanted to go and like sweep everything up.
I was the total opposite of you because that was where it really kicked in. I was like, oh god, the world's gonna end.
But you felt like the impulse to go and beat Sephiroth quickly?
Oh hell yeah! I mean, that's the thing. At that point, yes, because the narrative of like the last 40 hours has been building.
Well,
I
actually thought that game, and this is a problem that a lot of games have, is that they condition you to think that following the narrative thread as they want you to is actually detrimental. Like, if you don't have your gold chocobo and you don't have your Knights of the Round and you don't have all your material,
Final Fantasy VII things,
I've glazed over.
You'll have a much tougher time.
Yes.
And it's the same in Western RPGs, things like, you know, if you haven't done all side quests, you won't have sufficient experience.
Which, to bring it full circle, does tie back into that sort of numeric system, because it's like, if you haven't spent the time grinding, you won't be able to beat the boss, even though you're gonna punch in the same way that you would have done after 30 seconds, but that punch now does 5,000 damage.
There was a similar thing with Red Dead Redemption 2, which I do think sustains its length quite well, to be honest. Even though the storyline itself is quite episodic and quite repetitive, I think the world and the characters you encounter are so good. But then when that game finishes, like I felt robbed of potentially, you know, a lot of the extra stuff and the mechanical and the systems that I was engaging in, like the fishing or looking after the camp, because that when that wasn't there, the world itself felt a bit lifeless.
I think so. I think for me, in Red Dead's case, like it lost something after it lost the impetus for those mechanics. Because as soon as you do one of the robberies and you have enough gold to just survive, it's like, well, why would I do any of this rough and tumble ragtag stuff?
Yeah.
And then even for that ending point, like not spoilers, but what happens after the credits, that should have been DLC. Mm. Like I think we needed the breather. Like the more that they just kept it going, for me, kind of broke that stuff. It didn't really land as well. But you mentioned The Witcher. Like it's such a massive sprawling thing that you can just go be a Witcher in that world and do all these monster contracts and everything. How much that sort of jars with them trying to tell a meaningful story. Like balancing those two elements is so hard.
I think it gets a balance very bad.
How dare you? That's probably true.
I mean, there's other issues.
Yeah, I disagree, to be honest.
I think the biggest issue with The Witcher is actually not anything we've spoke about, but I'm going to mention it anyway. It's basically...
No fishing bin again?
That's one of them, yeah.
I know.
But Geralt or Geralt, whatever you want to call him.
Geralt. Jules is not correct. It's Geralt.
He's a like a pre-described character. He's got his own feelings, got his own emotions, his own...
Well, actually, he only went the trial of the crosses to be stripped of emotions. Yeah, but so try again.
But he doesn't in that game, though. He's got memories imported from the very beginning, and he's got...
Well, he's learning to feel again, isn't he?
Well,
he's got a wife
that also means he can react in completely contradictory ways whenever you're given a choice from one situation to the next. And basically, it's asking you to play it like an RPG,
yes,
whilst also giving you this character that they...
Mm. Which we've talked about this before, because we talk about this loads off
away from comms. I personally think it doesn't really work.
Whereas for me, I think that makes him the perfect protagonist, because then you can do whatever's needed and you can rationalize it either through his duty or the fact that he's discovering emotion and trying to think and have, you know, establish morality again and etc.
I think it makes him constantly ambiguous.
Mm. Someone messaged me and said, you guys always agree on the podcast too much. And I was like, one, how many podcasts have you seen? What the hell? And then two, we should do more debatey things. Josh, when you come down on either side of that.
You know what? I am not equipped to properly come to a conclusion, because I agree with you both to an extent. I think The Witcher does it better than other games, but when you are given a pre-prescribed character.
Well, what it does, it makes you care, but you certainly care about Geralt. Yeah.
We will genuinely do a separate Witcher podcast, because we can look forward to the future of the franchise.
It's one of those things that I think that only works if you're then role-playing as Geralt and not...
Geralt.
Everything's throwing me off today. I love The Witcher, I promise. I think you sort of, in that situation, have to role-play as the character rather than like your own version which is a weird...
You can't put yourself into Geralt. You have to be him, yeah.
Tim Schafer, when he was talking about Grim Fandango, and he said he'd like to think of the player as being an extension of the protagonist's conscience, which makes perfect sense. So you're sort of guiding his thought.
Does that not remove... this is such a different pod, but does that not remove what the character is?
Well, no. Mm. Not necessarily, because if you're thinking like Geralt, you should only get the options that Geralt can pick.
And I would say you do have
in Grim Fandango, Manny Calavera only ever does what he would do, and he only ever responds as he would. Like, even the dialogue choices of things that he would say.
One of the best examples of that is in the end of The Last of Us, when you think you're going to have a choice with Ellie and Joel just does what he wants to do, which I love. I love that they take the control away from you. Mm-hmm. We can totally do a separate podcast on that.
A really strange thing, though, because suddenly it creates this barrier between the player and the character you've just been playing as.
Yeah.
Or it makes it one of the best games of all time.
Well, it's certainly, it's inventive.
Yes.
I'll say that.
For another thing with The Witcher, how many percentage-wise, how many people do you think finished The Witcher 3?
Not many.
This is based on the 2018 statistics.
I think the vast majority of people will have been blown away by the opening. I know, I saw the news today that the TV series is going to have him in the bath. Which apparently is the best.
It better have that blooming crab in there as well.
Guy in the bath is the highlight of that game. And then I think most people will have been... Well, we've got through the tutorial area. I can't remember what it's called.
Camorin.
No, the area after that. The first big area. No.
What, the other one?
White something or anyway. Well, I've got past that and into the swampy bit with the Baron.
But
this is really good. This is really engaging.
Right.
And I think Novigrad is a choke point for me.
Oh, really?
Because that's when you start to do loads of fetch quests and loads of boring dialogue.
No, you did. You started doing loads of fetch quests.
And when you get to Skellige, it's like, oh, look, it's more grass and trees and caves. And...
go get back to your Zelda formula, will you?
38%, I want to go.
It was 62%. I have to clarify as well, these statistics are taken from a genius, some dude on Reddit called GICN, who did a whole bunch of different research last year. You can look up the topic. It's called Game Completion, We Don't Finish Games from last year. Took an average percentage from Steam, PSN, and Xbox Live to get an average percentage for the amount of people that started a game versus finished it.
I wonder if there's any difference between those average statistics for each platform as well.
Well, if you go to the post, like, yeah, he has everything broken down. I just took the completion statistic because it's a very hefty thing. But though, I think there's some stuff that's worth taking away. He had a whole thing about different variables, about what we class as the main component, the story-based thing, and the difference between trophy data and actual proper personal analysis, saying like, okay, this proves that this level was hit, but this one wasn't. So there's a difference between, like, for example, Final Fantasy VII, 23% of people acquire trophies through that game, but the 78% of people actually finish the story once you kill it down.
Have you ever finished a game and then you've ended up with almost zero trophies?
Yes, which I think is the case of Final Fantasy VII. That's based on the way those trophies are laid out. The overall thing to take away from this, though, I'll do game by game, is that all the games that he surveyed, which is a good 60 to 80 games, 63.86% was the overall completion percentage from everything, which again ties into the 2011 statistic of like 60% of people, 60% of a game is seen by the most people. So that seems to hold true, even though the games have got exponentially bigger since 2011.
It's slightly higher than I expect. Mm. I mean, people don't even have the attention to finish an entire YouTube video. I've seen like the retention stats, you know what I mean? So it's like, if you can't expect that from this short form content, mm-hmm. then even a game with as good a story as something like The Witcher, you know, I think it's natural that people drop off after a while once they get their fill of the open world.
Once they're nice and full. So the Witcher 3 was 62%, was up from The Witcher 1 and 2, which were on 55 and 56, which I think is just because that game was way more popular. I think way more people checked out 3 as opposed to 1 and 2.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily. I would expect that to have the opposite effect, though. Mm-hmm. I think the more people are playing it, the fewer people are completing it, especially if it's a word of mouth thing.
Maybe. I guess, yeah, either way, though, Wild Hunt seems to came in better. These are just some takeaway things per franchise, because like I said, there's so much to dissect. Assassin's Creed, they were averaging between 70 and 75% for the first batch of games. And then once you get past Black Flag, Origins went down to 60%, which was Origins was the first major change where they changed the combat model and everything else. So like for me, that kind of makes sense that like, I mean, Origins and Odyssey are just ginormous games.
Assassin's Creed as well, there was a lot of excitement because it was the first really big mainstream IP in a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first what?
The first Assassin's Creed. It was like
it's a big like media event.
Yeah, it was the first big fresh IP to drop in a long in a while.
It was like 2007, wasn't it? So it was like I remember that.
It was like BioShock.
That was afterwards.
BioShock came afterwards.
Yeah, this was like the first. Yeah, it was like the first batch, wasn't it? It was like Assassin's Creed. It was like Mass Effect. Yeah, and it was like BioShock and a bunch of other stuff.
Fair. I have the rose tinted glasses on for the 2000s. Where I'm just like, everything was great. There was new stuff every year. Have you seen Burnout? But so Assassin's Creed seems to drop off the bigger those games kind of got. Fallout, a lot of their percentages are in the 50s, all the way through New Vegas, Fallout 3, until Fallout 4 was 61%. Although the trophy data for that was 23.7. So this dude GICN had to like nail that down and be like precisely which trophies pointed to story completion or main component completion, but more people seem to get stuck into Fallout 4, which kind of matches up to more people playing it. They have the drive to get through it, I guess.
I suppose Fallout 4 was a more cinematic story as well.
It was a more accessible version of Fallout as well,
which is plus for me Fallout 3 is like deceptively short. Like if you stick to the main stuff, there's only like 13 missions or something and then you're done.
And it's not very good, in my opinion.
Fallout 3?
Yeah, when we talk about... Fallout 3 as a whole is good, but the main story for me is...
The story's not good.
The main story is the weakest component of Fallout 3.
I'm so weird. I need to pass my thoughts out on Bethesda, because I keep thinking about Bethesda, and I think I only really love Skyrim. The rest of it's just kind of like... I just I don't know. I'm thinking about it too much. Next thing down, Dark Souls 1, 2, and 3 came in at 61%, 65%, and 69%. I think it's just because they...
I'd say that's more of a surprise. Yes. But I think it's because it's appealing to a very, very specific type of person
who are just going to make a point of getting through it as much as possible. There were some statistics on Sekiro that came out earlier this year, which was, but this is right near launch, in the first week when we were comparing stuff, it was something stupid like 3% of people had seen the Ishin ending, which is one of the hardest bosses to beat. I imagine that's like changed by now, but all this stuff is from last year. Metal Gear Solid, all the story driven ones, the first ones like 1 through 4, all were in the 80%, so it makes sense because people want to see it through. Metal Gear 5, once it went open world, dropped down to 64%. So I think that kind of ties into
You look at what was great about Metal Gear Solid
and everything,
and it wasn't how cinematic it was how many fresh and inventive gameplay ideas it had, and how
it was also how cinematic it was.
That was a great part of it, but that wasn't why people loved it at the time. It was like introducing new things all the way throughout that game.
Ben, I have been holding this point in for the entire podcast, and I'm pleased you brought it up, because I've been replaying it, and that's what shocked me. There's not necessarily a gameplay loop to it.
Exactly. Right. You've mentioned before, Nia, that one thing you enjoy in games is the loop, and that I find that a little troubling, because for me, I don't think a game should be a constant loop where
everybody subconsciously enjoys the loop.
Yeah, but gameplay loops, as the word, didn't used either didn't exist or used to have new variety and ended up mixing the two things together, and things would change as it went on, whereas the Phantom Pain is much less like that, even though you've arguably got more options.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, something like Metal Gear, I mean, like, for the sake of just quickly addressing the cinematic thing, I think the way that game is shot, like, just that made it this big visual massive deal.
Yeah, I mean, it was unlike anything that came out.
Yeah, previously. But it kind of like, it kind of bred this fandom that was like, they were, I mean, like, obviously I'm one of them, but was so invested in the characters and everything else and where it was going to go. And then obviously 4 was the culmination of that. And once you've done that and it's like, actually there's one more, there's going to be a drop down in completion. And the last thing is the Uncharted games. They were averaging 80% across 1, 2, and 3. And then 4 went up to 84%. So I think, like Metal Gear, they sort of nailed their big finale. And I guess, like, I imagine an Uncharted 5 wouldn't land as well. For me, 4 was one of the last times that they could do that.
Yeah.
And when you were mentioning games that were elongated, for me, 4 is one of the biggest examples of a game that does not know when to end. And there's that whole bit at the end when you finally get Ellie back.
No.
It's not Ellie. Elena. Yeah. And there's that whole bit when you finally, like, rekindle with her, which is a great scene. But then, whatever, the whole back of that game just drags the hell out.
It's my favourite bit.
Is it, though?
Oh, it is. I like it when you get Elena back and they have the little...
And she's like a cold-blooded murderer, just killing everybody, doing stealth kills and snapping necks. And I'm like, what? How
so
do you...
the Drake, you know? We don't...
Yeah, but he's a killer. Yeah, Elena's just... How does she know how to do it?
Elena's been on 3 games with
She's
him.
A journalist.
She's been in adventures with him before.
Snapping necks, is it? This is how you do it. Make sure you get the tidbits.
She's been murdering people since at least Uncharted 2.
What do you call the tids? Isn't this carotid artery? That's what you want? That's the way to do with the choke out.
Interesting.
My friend does martial arts.
Journalism is a very dangerous profession.
It is a bit. I've sort of lost it trying to pick apart all these different completion statistics. But the point is, overall, is that around about 60% of people seem to finish the games, which is a little bit more promising than 90% based on the old 2011 Kotaku piece. But for me, that 60% stat lines up. I think that, like, I finish as much stuff as possible, but I guess if I averaged it out, I don't know if it's the same with you guys, I would probably say that I do finish 60% of all games. I think I probably finished more than that.
It completely depends on what type of game. I finish 100% of platformers.
If you go with main components.
Story-driven indie games, but about 10% of AAA games. Like, I got God of War for my birthday, and I can tell it's going to be great, but I don't ever have the energy to actually into it at this point in time. And I've never finished The Witcher 3 because I think I agree with Josh completely that now my sense of completion is the point at which I'm completely satiated on the game rather than when I see the end of it.
Right, which you'll never very...
Same with Final Fantasy 15, and all these games obviously have one thing in common, and it's the length, and it's that I feel like after a certain point I've seen everything except the change in wallpaper as it goes on.
That'd be the same thing for you.
Yeah, definitely. I used to be really stressed out about it like a few years ago, and I realised I wasn't finishing games anymore because I used to finish everything I got, and now I've just kind of embraced it, you know. I'm the same as what I've just said there. Once I'm satiated with something, you know what? I don't need to keep pushing myself to keep playing games. I really enjoy Days Gone as much as I ragging it all the time, but that thing burned me out in video games because there was a point where I could have stepped away, but because I wanted to see that story through, I kept playing. I put another 10 hours into it, then it threw me another area, so I put another 10 hours into it, and by the end, it's not like I was hating playing it, but I was just, I was past the point of being satiated, and I was just
which answers the question, the original question, like, you don't eat once you're full. The longer a game goes on, the worse it becomes, even though if it doesn't actually become worse, you just grow to dislike it
because
you've had enough.
And I think you can offset things like the statistics prove with story elements, with things to chase, with answers to mysteries or whatever, but like,
or just with make short games.
I was going to say, there seems to be like a calling
to... There should be no shame in making a short game.
I think overall, I don't know, if I would put a calling out, it's for more designed experiences, like shorter, tighter, better things.
Ironically, two of the games I've put the most time in this past year, two games I expected to be short, and that's Celeste and Shovel Knight.
Can get through them pretty in like
I put 30 hours into each of them, which
30 perfect hours, because games are
really
brilliant.
They really, really were.
Well, that's all, again, just elongating this podcast as much as possible.
Do it.
It was the same with Uncharted 4, even though you said that was a bit too long. For me
it was.
I finished that, and I was satiated in the fact that the story was satisfying, but I kept thinking, I could play more of this. I went to go through and got all the trophies and did chapters specific things and did like combat encounters over and over again, because I liked the gameplay, so it satisfied me on a story level. I'm pleased that wasn't longer, but at the same time, I wanted to go back and keep being in that
I'm totally with you. I think the game that I have to, there is nuance to this because I do love the gameplay and like, yeah, I love the way that it plays. For me, it was just, it felt like it was wrapping up. It was getting to a point. And then when it just kept going, I just kind of wanted it to end. And it was that thing where those two elements sort of clashed a little bit where I was like, you've got this really good pacing and then you're sort of stopping it and doing a little bit more. And it's sort of like, yeah, it didn't sort of unify as much as I wanted it to. We can also do an Uncharted podcast at some point because there's probably going to be a future of that too. For now though, you guys let us know what you think down in the comments below if you're watching the video version, or come find us on social media if you're listening on any of the audio platforms. This has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Benjamin Richardson.
Goodbye.
And Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.